right? So we are here, week two, podcast two, Elite Training for Basketball. I'm so glad that I can bring this to you every Tuesday morning, here in Austin, Texas, at least, every Tuesday morning. Today, we have some great topics to go over. What I want to talk about is actually quite interesting because most people, most basketball players, during the season, let's see if I can pull this up on Facebook while we do this.
I'm still for basketball. I'm so glad
it's not going to work. I'm still a rookie with this Zoom, so we're going to figure this out in terms of streaming it live on Facebook. But we're going to talk about strength training during the basketball season. How do we do it? How do we maintain our strength? How do we maintain our size? How do we maintain our speed? And why do we train during the season? And then I want to talk about mobility, flexibility. There's a few of you in the group that have talked to me about flexibility. I'm thinking of one guy specifically. I hope he's watching or will watch this eventually. He told me he's been doing the same hour-long stretching routine since high school. And now he's a professional. I don't know the extent of the progress that he's made with his stretching, but we're going to talk about mobility and what that exactly looks like and means and how to improve it. So let's talk first about the in-season training. Most basketball players, they scale back their intensity during the season. Now, when I say intensity, I don't mean like gusto, like I'm going to go balls to the wall today, blah, blah, blah. Intensity, when we're talking about weight training, is basically a value in relation to your one rep max. To go even simpler terms, intensity is basically the weight or the load that you're using. So during the off season, whether you had 8 weeks, 12 weeks, maybe even longer, 4 or 5 months this year for some people because of COVID, you have had a good amount of time to prepare your body for the season. Hopefully you've progressed throughout the off season and you've gotten very strong. You've gotten very fast leading up to the basketball season. And now that you've had that first tip off, that first game, what most basketball players do is they say they were working on sets of, let's say, 5 reps. So it's pretty heavy. Most athletes, basketball players especially, scale back the weight. They go to, say, 10 reps, 12 reps, and the intensity, again, when I say intensity, I mean weight, the intensity isn't there. So you've essentially primed your body, you've primed your nervous system throughout the off season to elicit this response so that you're ready for the season. And that first tip off of the first game, you're strong, you're fast, you've maybe put on some muscle, and you're good to go. But then during the season, you bring the weight back. This actually makes you slower. And that's really important because none of us who have ever played basketball want to be slow. We want to be as quick as possible, as fast as possible. The analogy I like is a race car team. In this race car team, they tune a car and they get it ready for a race. And then when the race starts, they only put it in third gear. They never go to fourth gear, fifth gear, sixth gear. They never take it to the max. Are they going to win that race? No, they're not going to win that race. They're actually going to get around the track pretty slow. And so the research shows that we need to perform lifts. We need to perform our weight training at least 80% intensity to maintain the gains that we've had in the off season. If you look at the chart here, and I don't know if this is going to come in backwards, it might, but I have a chart here in the weight room. And if we look at, let's just focus on this row here. So here's your reps, 1 all the way through 20. 80% is about 7 repetitions, okay? There's a glare. So 5 reps is 85%, all the way up to, obviously, if you're working at your maximal intensity, 100% of what you can lift, you can really only do that one time. That makes sense, right? So 80% is 7. We need to be working at least that amount of weight to maintain our strength. We need to do that for a couple reasons. One, we need to, so when you're playing basketball, You're getting up and down the court quickly. You're making fast, hard cuts. Again, I've talked about muscle fiber type in this group. There's type 1 fibers. There's type 2A fibers. There's type 2B fibers. The majority of the fibers that you're using in a game are those type 2 fibers, those fast twitch muscle fibers. When you scale back your weight during the season, when you're only training at 10 reps, 12 reps, and you're not going very hard, say you get to 12 reps and you could do 3 or 4 more, you are literally telling your body, I don't need to push it to the limit. I don't need to recruit these strong, fast twitch muscle fibers. I am not going to perform as optimally because you're training your body not to perform optimally. You're training your body not to perform at its peak after training all offseason to get there. Another thing you don't want to go that low of reps is because that is more hypertrophy training, more growth training. And that's also going to create more muscle breakdown. So over 10 reps, especially, but even over 8 reps, you're breaking down muscle fibers. You're going to create soreness. You're going to create fatigue. Then you're going to get on the court and your performance is going to suffer. So we want to train high intensities because it recruits more fast twitch muscle fibers, all right, which is what you need on the basketball court. But it's also going to recruit your nervous system, all right? And your nervous system, the mind-body connection. So how many muscle fibers can your brain recruit? Your nervous system will be optimized. Now, when we train at those high intensities, there is a possibility for overtraining. There is a possibility to still get sore. So what do we do in these cases? One thing that we do is we simply scale back the amount of sets that we do. So instead of doing, say, 6 sets of 4 reps, and again, if we look at 4 reps on the chart, 4 reps is about 88%. So 88% is in that range that we want. Remember, we want to be above 80, all right? So in that 1-7 range is a great place to be. So instead of doing, say, 6 sets of 4 reps, we only do 4 sets of 4 reps. If you go a couple weeks with that and you're still getting sore, drop it down to 3 sets of 4 reps. Because the nervous system, your brain, will remember the weight more than the amount of work that you do. It's going to remember the intensity that you work at. So we need to work at a high level, but we don't want to overtrain. So keep your weights heavy, focus on 5 reps and less. That's kind of my rule, like 3-5, maybe 6, maybe some 6-8s later in the workout. But your big lifts, your squats, your deadlifts, your chin-ups, your presses, your rows, these should all be like 3-6 is kind of a good ballpark for me, for most athletes, assuming you have some good experience in the weight room. There's a study from 2003 that studied the strength changes of 53 NCAA football players, American football players, during their in-season program. They found, quote, the athletes training at greater than 80% of their 1 rep max had significantly greater improvements than athletes training at less than their 80% of 1 rep max, okay? So let's say you can squat 100 kilos. They were squatting at least 80 kilos during the season, and their strength actually improved. Versus the group that squatted less than 80 kilos, their strength actually went down. And when your strength goes down, it means your nervous system recruitment goes down. It means your type 2 muscle fibers, your fast twitch fibers aren't working as optimally. And it means you're going to be slower on the basketball court. And I want to build fast, strong, explosive basketball players. So we need to keep our weights up during the season. We don't want to be slower. There's another study from 2006. In this study, the effects of elastic bands on the force and power characteristics of a back squat. So the findings, it shows a significant increase, 16% in peak force and peak power, 24%, when compared to the control group who did not utilize the bands in their training. The author concluded, quote, variable resistance training, accommodated resistance training, could be used to train these two performance characteristics. We're talking about power, so your explosiveness, your vertical jump, your first step, peak power and peak force, which might be especially useful for in-season training when weight room volume can sometimes be limited. So another way that we accommodate for not doing as many sets and reps is to add more resistance in the form of bands and or chains. So, and I can post a video in here, but there's a, we can band deadlifts, we can band squats. So as you come up and the elastic band stretches, it becomes tighter. So you have to work with optimal force through the full range of motion. These accessory tools that we can use in the weight room can actually help to improve your force and your power output during the season. And it especially helps because we're not doing the amount of work, okay? And to that note, your workouts need to be no longer than 45 to 60 minutes, okay? You should get in, you should do the work, make sure you take your rest period with those heavier sets, all right? But those sessions are 45 to 60 minutes and you're done, you're out of there, okay? One last study I want to show. In 2006, they studied the effects of loaded jump squats and drop jumps on female volleyball players during season. Volleyball is very similar to basketball. Very quick movements, a lot of jumping, a lot of quick horizontal movements, and then the play is done and it's over. So prior to the training, the athletes had a decrease of 5% in approach jump height during the first half of the season. After 11 weeks of ballistic in-season training, the athletes increased their approach vertical by 5.3%. These findings give evidence to the importance of the inclusion of low-volume ballistic and plyometrics during season. So adding plyometrics into your in-season training program is actually a very good thing. So let's define plyometrics, because most people think any type of jumping is plyometric work. By definition, plyometric work is typically just 3 repetitions or less. Also, a set of plyometrics, whatever, whether it's like single leg bounding, double leg bounding, box jumps, jumping over hurdles, whatever the plyometric exercise is, the sets need to last no longer than 12 seconds, okay? If the set lasts longer, you're actually training that movement to perform at a suboptimal level, and you're actually training to be slower. Why is that? The human body can only operate at peak intensity for 9 to 12 seconds, depending on the human and how well you're trained. That's why the 100-meter dash in the Olympics, Usain Bolt, he's known as the fastest man in the world and not the 200-meter or the 400-meter. Because even at those races, those distances, for those of you who run track, you know, 20 seconds, 40, 50 seconds, you cannot sprint. You have to at least have a pace in place. That 100 meter is just all out, as fast as you can run, get there. Because the human body can only work maximally for 9 to 12 seconds. So if your plyometric work is over 12 seconds per set, you'll actually see a decrease in performance. The body has to recruit different muscle fibers. It recruits a different fuel. We've talked about energy systems in the past. And you will see a decrease in performance. Now, one of you had asked, I think it was Elijah, maybe it wasn't, but I think it was Elijah, asked about in-season training when you're playing a lot of minutes, okay? Everything that I just outlined is for you. High weight, low reps, lots of rest in those, in between those sets, plyometric training, adding in elastic bands or chains to accommodate the strength curve and to accommodate resistance for the lack of volume that we have, volume meaning amount of sets and reps. That's for you. For the person that's riding the bench, that's not playing a lot of minutes, maybe you're a rookie or a second year, or you have an all-star in front of you and you're their backup, you might play 5, 10, 15 minutes a game. You can still improve during the season. And I will give you a little bit more leeway in terms of getting some higher reps, spending a little more time in the gym than that guy who plays 30 minutes a game, 40 minutes a game, because you're still evolving as a basketball player. And I'm not saying that starter isn't, that guy that plays all those minutes. But you're still evolving as a basketball player. You're still growing. And if you're not getting those minutes in games, then you can be afforded a little more time in the weight room, working on things that you need to work on to improve your body. Because that's my first rule with all basketball players that I train, and you need to really take advice, this advice seriously. Don't necessarily train for the game of basketball, but train for your body, what your body specifically needs. You might have weak hamstrings. You might have weak upper body pressing strength. You might have whatever, weak core, doesn't matter, whatever that is. You need to focus on your weaknesses. Just like in the off season, you're not a good ball handler, work on your ball handling. You're not a good mid-range jump shooter, work on your mid-range game. You don't know how to do a 1-2 dribble pull-up. You don't know how to step back. That's what you're going to work on in the offseason to improve. Same thing in the weight room. Your body is your machine that gets you paid, that makes you money, that brings you joy on the basketball court. Work on the weaknesses, improve those weaknesses, and you will be a stronger athlete, okay? So if you don't play a lot of minutes, I do think you could use and afford a little bit more time. Just be aware if it is really slowing you down in practices and people are noticing and you're noticing, then you know maybe taper it back to the examples and the suggestions that I gave earlier. Now, what a lot of people so that's the training side of things. A lot of players, it's really common, lose weight during the season. They build up muscle in the off season, and then 5, 6, 8 months later, the muscle's gone. This doesn't have to happen. It happens for two reasons. One, we just covered all the training aspects. You're not training the way you should. You're giving your body the wrong signals, and it's responding how you're giving to the signals that you're giving it. Okay. The second thing is you're not eating enough, and this is probably even bigger. Because I see a lot of people that don't work out properly. A lot of the guys in the NBA, they don't work out the way they probably should. And yet they still have these, you know, awesome physical, you know, bodies, these physical specimens. So we have to eat to maintain our weight. So how do we figure that out? All right. And this is big. And I'm going to give you all the math, and then I'm going to have you forget the math. Okay. But what does it look like? So grab my board here. Let's say, and again, I hope this doesn't come in backwards, but it might. Let's say you weigh 100 kilos. Okay. So you're 100 kilos. I'm in America, so we're going to use pounds. So that's 220 pounds. All right. Now, 220 pounds to maintain, we need at least 12 to 14 calories per pound. Okay. 12 to 14 calories per pound of body weight per day. So at the 12 number, that's 2,640 calories per day. That's just to break even. Okay. On a day that you don't do any type of exercise, you're going to burn about 30% over this number. So that now takes us to 3,432 calories per day. That's on a day that you don't play basketball. That's on a day that you don't exercise. All right. How many of you are doing 3,432 calories per day? Because I know a lot of you pros are probably close to that or somewhere around that. All right. We're going to burn. Now, there's a couple different ways to figure out what we actually burn on days we play basketball. Every day is different. Every person's different. Depending on how much you play, there's a lot of factors. But we're going to look about 20 to 25% over this number. Another way you can look at it is, again, depending on how much you're playing, 500 to 800 calories per hour of exercise, of intense exercise. So let's just figure on the low end, okay? We're gonna go 500. Let's say you have, let's say you do a weight training session on your game day. I'm totally fine. I think weight training sessions on your game days are great. We didn't talk about it earlier, but weight training on your game days can actually stimulate your nervous system even the day before a game. It can excite your nervous system so that you are more amped up during your game. All right. As long as you don't drive it to fatigue, like we talked about. So let's say you train on your game day, there's 500 calories. And then let's say you work during the game, you go hard for about an hour. Again, this is the low side. Trust me, this is the low side. So there's another 1,000 calories. Adding it to that, we're looking at 4,432 calories on a game day, on a day that you have practice. Because remember, let's say you have a typical 2 hour or give or take practice. We're going to burn about, 1,000 calories. There's your number. All right. Anything under that and you're going to lose muscle. Now imagine doing that over the course of 6 months. It's no wonder you start the season at 220 and you end up the season at 205. You can keep your muscle on during the season, but most of you aren't consuming enough calories like that. So let's see it. Let's break this down even more. Let's say 30%. So we're at 4,432 calories, and we're going to eat 30% of our calories from protein. You need 332 grams of protein. Okay, let's go back 4,432, and we're going to eat. You basketball players, let's just say 30% of our calories are coming from fat. So we need 147 grams of fat. You see that? There it is. And then, so 30 and 30 is 60. So we're now, let's see, times 0.4. We're doing 40% of our calories from carbs. So that's 443 grams of carbs. There's a breakdown. You get about 50 grams in a chicken breast. It's about 6 chicken breasts a day. Okay. So it's pretty daunting. It's pretty intense. If you need to supplement with a protein shake here and there, I understand that. That's totally fine. So rather than looking at it from these huge numbers, what I want you to look at first is set a protein goal of about 50 to 60 grams of protein every time you eat a meal. And hopefully you're eating 4 meals a day, sometimes 5. Okay. So again, I know 4 times 60 is only 240 grams of protein. And that's not 330 that we said. Yeah. 332. But I can almost guarantee you, most of you guys, that's more than the protein that you're eating. Okay. One thing that I've always told my players in the past is to eat quickly. The faster you eat, you'll be able to kind of get ahead of the brain before it tells your body that it's full. So try to eat fast, scarf it down fast. High protein, high vegetables, lots of greens. Okay. Those are my first two. Don't get so inundated with the numbers. Eat 60 grams of protein 4 to 5 times a day. Most of you guys, assuming your weight's up there, and eat greens every time you eat. Those are my first two rules for you. Okay. Now we only have a few minutes. I want to talk about mobility. I hope that answers your question about in-season training. Please comment below if you have questions about training in season, because most of you are in that preseason or your leagues have already started. So, again, one of you guys that I've talked with talked about mobility and lack of flexibility in the hips, things like that. Mobility is actually the active flexibility. So flexibility is like, can you reach behind your back? How far can you stretch your leg? Mobility is being able to actively move through a range of motion. And that's more important in basketball games. And this guy I talked to, he does a lot of stretching. So the two things that I want to cover, your fascia determines your mobility or immobility, one of the things. So when you stretch, you're not really stretching your fascia, and we're not going to go too in depth, but let's just say your fascia is much more involved than this, but let's just say fascia, if you've ever eat a piece of fried chicken and you take the skin off, there's that little film, kind of little, really thin little film that's over the meat. That's basically fascia. Fascia wraps our whole musculoskeletal system, kind of like a casing. And that is like, it's more plastic than elastic. So muscles are elastic. Think of fascia more like trying to stretch a Tupperware lid. You're just not going to be able to do it. So when you stretch, while it may feel good, we know stretching can help to relax. Think like yoga. So if you're stressed out, if it feels good, if you just want to stretch to lower your stress, to relax at night, do it. It's wonderful. It feels good. Do it. But you're not really going to improve your mobility that much. What you have to do is improve and stretch your fascia. And that requires something totally different. The other thing is you have to move your body through a full range of motion at each joint. And that's a big problem that I see. For example, in squatting, you have to go all the way down to the bottom. Full squat is redundant, okay? If you don't, you're not moving your knees through a full range of motion. You're not moving your hips through a full range of motion. You're not moving your ankles through a full range of motion. Your back isn't getting any more mobility, and it should, and it needs to. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And there's ways to manipulate getting down all the way in a squat. But you have to work your body through a full range of motion so that the nervous system understands that you can get through a full range of motion. I've had clients who can't squat to the bottom. Within a week or two, they can squat to the bottom and their squat looks beautiful because we retrained the motor pattern and we retrained their brain, their nervous system to basically say, okay, this is acceptable. This is allowable. And you can do this. Okay. So work your body through a full range of motion. When we're looking to improve mobility, we have to do that. Stretching probably won't get it done because of the fascial restraints, fascia restricts. And then I talked about it last week. So each joint, so again, think about primitive man, think about, thousands of years ago, and it's every day is survival. Okay. Our bodies were built to survive. Our bodies were built to get from today until tomorrow. If you have a broken knee, if you have a broken ankle, you can't outrun that tiger. You can't outrun that lion, that saber-toothed tiger. You can't do it as well. So as a defense mechanism, if there is a weakness present at a joint, the body will create stiffness in that joint, think being immobile, to make it less likely that it will get injured. So a lot of times you are immobile because you are weak. You are weak in specific places. And those specific places, once they are strong, and once we work through that full range of motion and work through that full motor pattern, the lights turn on, the get floodgates are open, your joints can now move through a full range of motion. So get stronger, strengthen your weaknesses. I've already said that once during this podcast. Strengthen your weaknesses, please. Work through a full range of motion. And then I can give you tips on fascial stretching and things like that, but stretching isn't going to do it. I've also seen plenty of athletes who don't possess the passive flexibility. So for example, if someone's laying on the bench and I lift their leg up to see how far their hamstrings can stretch, it should go to a certain angle, and sometimes they only go part of the way. Yet they can still perform full range of motion movements. So the nervous system is dictating movement. And even though they might have a tight hamstring, and it can limit them, trust me, I know, but they can still move through that full range of motion. I won't necessarily make that a priority of that single tight hamstring, because we're going to improve that already, because one, they can work through a full range of motion. So we're going to continue to work through a full range of motion, and then see if that hamstring gives them trouble in going forward. But I really focus on strengthening your weaknesses, and I really focus on working through a full range of motion to improve your mobility. Those are the two things, first and foremost for me. So that's all I got today. I hope that helps you with your in-season training. I really want you to try. If you're like most basketball players, you're working lighter weights, you're thinking that's optimal. It really isn't. You're actually training your body to be slower. You're training your body to be weaker. You're training your body not to maintain the muscle. And your performance will deteriorate on the basketball court. You're actually telling your body to become a slower athlete. So train heavy. Train at the right intensity, meaning weight. Get in and out within 45 to 60 minutes. Add some plyometrics to your training. And then work through a full range of motion. This will improve your mobility, as well as improve all of the muscles that we need to use during basketball. So that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed it. Please ask any questions below, and check back next week. We're going to do a whole other live session. See ya.